Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Last night, Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain had their third and final debate, that at Hofstra University in New York City, and the issue of abortion finally arrived on the presidential scene. In terms of the debates, it was the first time the word had been mentioned, and it was the first time there was something of a direct exchange between Senator Obama and Senator McCain on this issue after each received the nomination of his party and the presidential debate season began. We're going to be talking today about this issue. We're going to be listening to what happened last night, because what is really significant, I think, is the aftermath. So sometimes this is the way issues work in the culture. This is the way events that appear small turn into something larger. And let me trace this out for you for just a moment. Last night, Senator Obama and Senator McCain both answered a question related to abortion. But within the past 24 hours, the response to those two statements tells us a great deal about where we stand in America on this issue. And it also tells us that some people, some observers out there in the media, think that the big question is one of tone rather than one of policy. Now, we discussed the issue of abortion in the 2008 presidential race with our guest Robert P. George earlier this week, because we were talking about Barack Obama's position on abortion in terms of issues related from the Freedom of Choice Act all the way down to the issue of human cloning and the rest. We're going to be talking today about what both candidates had to say. And because this issue is so front and center and must be so front and center in the issue of how we vote in terms of the 2008 presidential race, we're going to be listening to these candidates. We're going to return to the debate last night. We're going to look at some of the analysis, because I will tell you, early this morning, this analysis started pouring in, and I found myself perplexed. If indeed some of these analysts are onto something, then America has shifted its understanding of this issue significantly. But we'll test that theory today on this program. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The big issue here is how the issue of abortion will play out, should play out, in terms of Christians making the decision about the 2008 presidential election. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, a look at some other issues in the news. We have, of course, the question before us of politics. The question is before us because most of us face daily news broadcasts, constant cable news broadcasting, constant chatter on the radio, and for that matter, almost anywhere we turn. But should the same be true of elementary school students? What about kids in grades 1 through 12? Should they be presented with teachers, for instance, who openly endorse candidates in public school classrooms? Should public school teachers be allowed to wear buttons and use other paraphernalia that would endorse a candidate, advertise for a candidate? All right, let me just tell you, Kathleen Kingsbury has a fascinating article out at Time.com, Time Magazine. She says this: if kids grades 1 through 12 could vote, Barack Obama would be our next president. In a recent non-scientific poll conducted by the academic publisher Scholastic, 57% of nearly 250,000 youngsters voted to send the Democratic nominee to the White House. How much, Ms. Kingsbury asks, how much of students' opinions are a reflection of their teachers' political preferences, and is that kind of influence a bad thing? Those are the questions central to a federal lawsuit filed this month by New York City's Teachers Union. The United Federation of Teachers has sought a temporary restraining order against a district policy that bars teachers from wearing campaign buttons in the city's public schools. The prohibition, union officials argue, is a violation of teachers' First Amendment rights to free speech and political expression. Quote, it doesn't matter whether you support Obama or Republican Senator John McCain, said United Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten. As voters, we should all have the right to express our views. Okay, interesting. I think that's a question that, so far as I know, I have not confronted in the 2008 presidential race. Should teachers be allowed to wear buttons? My argument is going to be no. That what we should have in the classroom is a politics-free zone for elementary school students in particular, where there can be no open promotion and politicking of particular candidates. You know, and I know, that teachers are going to let certain clues out, are going to make statements related to issues, especially when you reach the middle school and high school subject matter, where you're going to be talking about politics, history, and economics and other issues. These things will out, as you might say, but when it comes to elementary school classrooms, it is inconceivable to me that it's an appropriate use of a teacher's authority to enter the classroom wearing a political button. Now you have teachers saying it curtails their free speech. Well, just imagine changing the context a little bit. What if you walked into the local department store? You go up to the cosmetic counter. You go into the men's department. You go into the electronics department. Would you expect to see employees in a department store wearing T-shirts, festooning, buttons, any kind of political paraphernalia that would declare allegiance to one candidate or the other? No, you wouldn't. Why? Because you would have a department store that would say, it is not our business to push a political candidate, certainly not in a way that might alienate some people who would be potential customers walking into the store. We are neither a Democratic nor a Republican store in terms of our customers. It doesn't matter when you're selling cosmetics or menswear or electronics. So, no, you can't wear that. And I think you would be hard-pressed to walk into any major retail establishment in America and find an employee wearing a political button for a candidate. And the reason is easily understood. Now, what if those persons said it violates freedom of speech? Well, you know what the employer would say? Good, you take your freedom of speech and go elsewhere, because insofar as you work with me, you accept a certain curtailment of your freedom of speech, because you are representing no longer just yourself, you're representing me. You're wearing my shirt with my company's name on it. You've got my name tag on it. And I just know, as you know, that wouldn't get anywhere in the court. So why would teachers be any different? If anything, given their responsibility, it should be even more clear that they should stay clear of this kind of political endorsement and this kind of political statement, especially when it comes to the public schools. Because in that sense, at least in theory, they're working for all of us. Other issues in the news include a fascinating article at the New York Times on college. The article is written by Lisa Belkin. She writes in the Motherlode blog, Adventures in Parenting, a column at the New York Times. And she writes about her own son, whom she is told is a member of the largest wave of graduating high school seniors to apply to college in the history of the United States. That is, the high school graduating class of 2009 will include an estimated 3.3 million 17- and 18-year-olds headed for college. 3.3 million. Now, this mom of one young man graduating from high school this coming spring says that she is daunted by what this means in terms of the odds of admissions to the kinds of schools where she and her son evidently hope that he may be able to gain admission. Well, the bottom line is she's beginning to ask a question. This is what she says. With no money to pay, the decision tree changes. And while college costs so far, she says here, seem to be for the best. My own parents always told me they would scrub floors if necessary to send me to college. She goes on and asks the question, does a $50,000 a year education really buy a better life than a $12,000 a year education, or does it buy a fancier sticker for the car? Well, after she goes through all of her arguments, I think that's the key question. And if you think about it for just a moment, there are an awful lot of high school seniors right now, and behind them juniors and sophomores, looking at college thinking, my life and my success in life is going to depend on me getting into college A, B, or C. You have many more, by a multiple of times, applicants to schools like Yale and Harvard and Princeton and Brown and Columbia and Stanford, and you go down the list, than can ever be accepted. And yet, if they are accepted, you're looking at enormous costs and all the rest. Do they have some advantage from going to those schools? Definitely. But if you start looking at long-term earnings and long-term happiness, long-term job satisfaction, long-term kinds of issues, you're going to see that I think if you look at the question honestly, a $50,000 a year education is not that superior to a $12,000 a year education. And I would just hope that when people are thinking about not only in the context of this economic squeeze, but the general issue of our ongoing stewardship as Christians, paying too much for higher education should be just as suspect as paying too much for anything else. There ought to be some proportionality here. And take it from one who is the president of a seminary and a college. You want quality, but you can't always track quality by the price. And when it comes to higher education, the question is, what is this education for and what does the student intend to do with it? Asking the right questions may lead you to a very far less expensive answer, and it also may lead to far less disappointment among students who think, and I believe clearly erroneously think, that if they don't get into this college, then their life is ruined. I mean, there are parents in Manhattan who think if they don't get their kids in the right preschool, the kid's life is ruined. That, my friends, is absolute nonsense. Back to talk about the 2008 presidential race and the issue of abortion and last night's presidential debate. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Last night's presidential debate at Hofstra University was the third and final debate of the 2008 presidential race. When it comes to the two major candidates, the two nominees for president, the Democratic nominee, Senator Barack Obama, of Illinois, and the Republican nominee, Senator John McCain of Arizona. Bob Schieffer of CBS News was the moderator of the debate. It was a bit more loose, I thought, in terms of structure than the previous two, but it finally got to the issue that I said last night before the debate I hoped would arise, and that is the issue of abortion, because it had been studiously avoided in the previous debates. But it did arise last night. The first time it arose was in the context of Mr. Schieffer's question concerning a litmus test, that is, abortion as a litmus test for judicial nominations, and certainly looking at nominations, potential nominations to the United States Supreme Court. Barack Obama answered it this way. Let's listen.
Now, I would not provide a litmus test, but I am somebody who believes that Roe versus Wade was rightly decided. I think that abortion is a very difficult issue, and it is a moral issue, and one that I think good people on both sides can disagree on. But what ultimately I believe is that women, in consultation with their families, their doctors, their religious advisors, are in the best position to make this decision. And I think that the Constitution has a right to privacy in it that shouldn't be subject to state referendum any more than our First Amendment rights are subject to state referendum, any more than many of the other rights that we have should be subject to popular vote. So,
a fascinating statement there by Senator Barack Obama. I want to take it apart just a moment in terms of our analysis. He says that he would not provide a litmus test, but the next word is but. Now, in fairness, Senator John McCain basically said the same thing in reverse. He was asked about a litmus test. He said no, he would not have a litmus test, but he went on to say he would be looking at the judicial patterns of thinking of justices, and went on to say that Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided, and therefore someone who would wrongly decide Roe v. Wade or suggest that he supported a wrongly decided decision would have a suspect jurisprudence philosophy and way of interpreting the Constitution. So both of them said, no, I don't have a litmus test, but they followed that up with but, and the but meant that they actually do have a litmus test. They just don't want to call it that. And so I think they're pretty much, one up on that one apiece. They both said basically the same thing about the litmus test, but they went on to come to two entirely opposite positions concerning how that test would work. Now, I was shocked last night when Senator Obama went on, who said so straightforwardly the words, "I am somebody who believes that Roe versus Wade was rightly decided." Okay. He goes on and says he thinks good people can disagree on this moral and difficult issue. He says, "I think that the Constitution has a right to privacy in it that shouldn't be subject to state referendum, any more than our First Amendment rights are subject to state referendum, any more than many of the other rights that we have should be subject to popular vote." Well, let me point out a very key distinction there. The First Amendment freedom is spelled out in the words of the Constitution. This supposed right to privacy was invented by justices of the U.S. Supreme Court in terms of what Justice William F. Douglas called a penumbra of rights. In other words, it's not in there. Lawrence Tribe, and we'll be looking at this in coming weeks, Lawrence Tribe, a professor of law at Harvard University, liberal legal theorist with a great deal of influence there on the left. He has argued in his new book that the Constitution is actually accompanied by an invisible Constitution, which includes things that aren't in the words. Well, if you believe in that invisible Constitution, then you can put anything in it that you want. And then Barack Obama clearly says that he thinks that Roe versus Wade was rightly decided. He thinks that there is this right to privacy that isn't listed or mentioned or articulated. It's not in the words of the Constitution. The jurists who have established it simply say it's in there. Trust us. Now, getting to the issue of abortion proper, there was a very interesting exchange here. And I think when you start looking at the whole question, you really get to a very clear distinction between the two candidates. I want to listen to Barack Obama again. And in this case, I want us to listen to what he has to say, because what he says here is what many people today have leapt upon as the way out of the issue. We're talking here about where Barack Obama speaks and claims that no one is pro-abortion. Let's listen.
Last point I want to make on the issue of abortion. This is an issue that, look, it divides us. And in some ways, it may be difficult to reconcile the two views. But there surely is some common ground when both those who believe in choice and those who are opposed to abortion can come together and say, we should try to prevent unintended pregnancies by providing appropriate education to our youth, communicating that sexuality is sacred and that they should not be engaged in cavalier activity, and providing options for adoption and helping single mothers if they want to choose to keep the baby. Those are all things that we put in the Democratic platform for the first time this year, and I think that's where we can find some common ground, because nobody's pro-abortion. I think it's always a tragic situation. We should try to reduce these circumstances.
Let's give
Okay, I've got to say something right here, and this is the strongest thing I believe I have said in the context of the 2008 presidential race. Barack Obama is simply wrong. I can't read his heart to know if he's intentionally misrepresenting the case or if he's just factually, profoundly wrong. But when he says nobody is pro-abortion, that's just not true. Look at the feminists who are selling T-shirts saying, I had an abortion. Look at the arguments coming from some of the pro-abortion organizations saying that they criticize those who say that their goal is to reduce abortions because that implies that there's something wrong with abortion. It's just not intellectually honest. This is a man who, after all, has been out in the public, and he swims in the political ocean with these people. He knows this. And you have Professor Robert P. George in the article that I wrote about at my website at albertmuller.com, and as he talked about on the program earlier this week, he suggests that Senator Barack Obama is indeed the most extreme candidate ever to run on the issue of abortion in terms of the presidential race. He suggests he's the most pro-abortion legislator in the history of the United States Congress. You can look at that argument, judge it for yourself. It's persuasive to me. You simply cannot come up with any place where Barack Obama has taken any vote to reduce any kind of abortion in any situation. There's something else in this. What you really need to understand is going on here is reflected in the article by William Salatin, who is one of, I think, the most interesting journalists on bioethics in America at Slate.com and picked up elsewhere. He's written an article after the debate last night in which he says that the kind of language used by Senator Obama there is the kind of language that America's looking for. This is what he says. He says that the Republican candidate will be looking at Senator McCain's statements. Says the Republican candidate talks in character language, and he describes abortion as bad, terrible, extreme. He talks about clear-cut things and feelings, whereas Barack Obama talks about common ground, options, help, reduce. William Salatin says these are diffusing and calming words. They fit Obama's personality, but more than that, they're pragmatic. They convey action, progress, solution. William Salatin is suggesting that Obama has tapped into what Americans really want on the abortion issue now, which is soothing talk that avoids making moral decisions. That is simply pragmatic and says, let's just agree that we're going to try to handle this without actually dealing with abortion. We'll deal with other stuff like sex education and trying to emphasize adoption. I want to hear from you. The phone number is 877-893-8255. What do you think of this? 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with your calls.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to go to Ricardo, calling from Alpharetta, Georgia, listening on the World Wide Web. Ricardo, were you listening to the debate last night?
No, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to catch the debate last night, Dr. Mohler.
Well, I don't think you would have been surprised in that there was no revelation last night that changed what we know about either candidate's position on the abortion issue. So just tell me, how important is the abortion issue in your thinking about the 2008 race?
Well, it is critically important because just looking at the Declaration of Independence, the civil government is supposed to protect life, liberty, and property. And just looking at Scripture, I see it as preeminently important. Now, given that John McCain, actually not so much John McCain, but both the candidates, McCain and Obama, have proven themselves by their roll call votes to confirm Supreme Court justices, appropriation bills for funding abortion services, Planned Parenthood, etc., I feel I cannot support either Senator McCain nor Senator Obama.
Okay, you lost me a little bit there. Say that one more time, Ricardo, the last part there.
Well, just based on the roll call votes, if you look at, for instance, votes to confirm Supreme Court justices,
right? Okay,
Senator McCain has voted to confirm three of the pro-abortion justices on the Supreme
Okay.
Court.
Okay, who would those be?
That would be Breyer, that would be Ginsburg, and I can't remember the third one offhand.
Yeah, okay, that's a very interesting argument. And, you know, Ricardo, you're going to have to make your own decision based upon this. Senator McCain spoke to that last night. And this gets down to how you understand the power of the presidency and how that factors into what you're saying. He said last night in a very interesting statement, he said elections have consequences. And what he meant by that is that when the American people elect a president, they elect a figure who has the right to make nominations. And McCain's position, and I'll be honest to say, this is not where my position would be, but just to be clear and fair to Senator McCain about his position would be that when the President of the United States, duly elected by the people of the United States, presents a qualified candidate, the Senate should confirm them. That's the argument he made to Democrats in favor of Chief Justice Roberts and Associate Justice Alito. So I would argue that he's been consistent there. I would also tell you right up front that I don't think I could have operated that way. But I would say that it gets back to his basic understanding of the role of the Senate in terms of advice and consent in the confirmation of justices, ambassadors, and other appointments, that elections have consequences and that the president has that authority. So that's very interesting. But Ricardo said that the issue of abortion is very important in the presidential choice. He says that he can't vote for either. That's not where I am in this, just in terms of trying to think this through, because I'm looking at who will be making the nominations to the United States Supreme Court. And when I think about the kinds of nominations that I believe must be made, I've got to really take with incredible seriousness my responsibility to elect a president who will make the kinds of appointments. And that's where I believe Senator McCain's been abundantly clear. And that's where the change is actually going to take place. When it comes down to what am I hoping for? I'll be right up front. I'm hoping for a reversal of Roe v. Wade. I'm hoping for that decision to be overturned. I have to work in terms of my political thinking towards what would make that happen. And just to be fair to the entire process here, we've heard twice from Senator Barack Obama. Let's listen to what Senator McCain has to say. And in this case, he was talking about Senator Obama's record on partial birth abortion, but he got at deeper issues here. And he got particularly to the section that William Salatin cites as where he thinks America is not going compared to where he says he thinks Obama indicates where America is going. Let's listen and compare and come to our own conclusion.
Then there was another bill before the Senate Judiciary Committee in the state of Illinois not that long ago where he voted against a ban on partial birth abortion, one of the late term abortion, really one of the bad procedures, terrible. And then on the floor of the Illinois State Senate, he voted present. I don't know how you vote present on some of that. I don't know how you align yourself with the extreme aspect of the pro-abortion movement in America. And that's his record. And that's a matter of his record. And he'll say it has something to do with Roe v. Wade, about the Illinois State Senate. There was clear-cut votes that Senator Obama voted, I think, in direct contradiction to the feelings and views of mainstream America.
Now, there you heard Senator John McCain. And interesting, William Salatin, in a very influential piece posted this morning, suggests that Senator McCain there is using an outdated language that Americans aren't really going to hear anymore, using words like bad, terrible, extreme, clear-cut, speaking about mainstream America. Good guys and bad guys on abortion. William Salatin says that's gone. We're just left with the pragmatism of Barack Obama. I want to know what you think. Give me a call, 877-893-8255, and we'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Interesting conversation here. Yeah, almost welcome to the Albert Mohler Conversation. Let's just call it that for a moment. Let me invite you to join the conversation by calling me at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. What we're about here is intelligent Christian conversation, is trying to figure out how we as Christians should take these issues apart and put them back together, especially in light of last night's exchange on abortion at the third and final presidential debate of the 2008 political campaign. It's fascinating. Here we are. I mean, the time is really closing in on us. The election's coming very fast. November 4 is going to be here like tomorrow. Most of us are at the point where we're ready in terms of the fatigue of this whole process for it to be over. But folks, we got hard work to do in thinking and in talking and in persuading and in teaching issues between here and there. Let's go to Salem, Oregon. Sherman's listening on KCCS. Sherman, what do you think?
Well, you know, underlying the whole Constitution is the right to life, because if you don't have the right to life, you have no other rights. So if the right to privacy is supposedly a penumbral right, or one that springs from another right, well, it can't violate the very foundation that it springs from. That makes no sense. You can't have the right to life as a foundation for your whole Constitution and then say the right to privacy violates your very foundation for your Constitution.
Well, you've got me convinced, Sherman. I'm with you on it. And let me tell you that another line of evidence for where you're going with this is that the Constitution simply assumes that a person's a person. And we are now buying into, I mean, with Roe v. Wade, a system in which somehow some personalization takes place, to where you have conception and moving all the way towards birth. And at some point in there, I mean, this whole system of trimesters, it's like you're a third of a person in the first trimester, you're two-thirds of a person in the second trimester, and three-thirds of a person, potentially, in the third trimester, when the state can intervene to deny a right to abortion, except in the case of the physical or mental health of the mother. By the way, John McCain nailed that last night. He nailed that so solidly. He hit that out of the park when he spoke to that issue about health, and he's been hit all over the place for it. In fact, let's just go ahead and listen to him. Let's listen to what he has to say here, because what he had to say here is really, really, really important. Let's listen to Senator John McCain.
Health of the mother. You know, that's been stretched by the pro-abortion movement in America to mean almost anything. That's the extreme pro-abortion position, quote, health. But look, Cindy and I are adopted parents. We know what a treasure and joy it is to have an adopted child in our lives. We'll do everything we can to approve adoption in this country. But that does not mean that we will cease to protect the rights of the unborn. Of course, we have to come together. Of course, we have to work together. And of course, it's vital that we do so and help these young women who are facing such a difficult decision with a compassion that will help them with the adoptive services, but the courage to bring that child into this world, and we'll help take care of it.
Let's stop there.
Now, that really got to one of the issues of the tragedy and travesty of Roe v. Wade, this idea of the health of the mother, which is the physical and emotional health of the mother. When you stretch it that way, you're no longer talking about the pregnancy being a threat to the mother's life, an extremely, extremely rare, but intellectually we need to acknowledge a possible circumstance. You're talking here about the possibility for a woman to say, I simply feel that this will be too emotionally distressing for me to have a baby at this time. And then you're talking about a third trimester abortion. Now, just to get back to Sherman's point, he is suggesting that it is a basic premise of the Constitution that one has a right to life, otherwise there are no other rights that are meaningful. I would buttress his argument by saying that the document of our founding that came before the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, makes that not only implicit but explicit, a point that was made by our first caller. You start looking at this and you realize we're looking at a situation in which people are saying that Americans just won't deal with this anymore. And that's why I mentioned the William Salatin article, because what he's saying, no doubt about it, what he's saying is that America wants a pragmatic solution. They like the soft language of Barack Obama, not the hard character morality language of John McCain. Now, I wrote an article back in 2004 on Hard America and Soft America, and I was there picking up on an argument by Michael Barone, one of the most interesting political analysts of our age, in which he wrote a book on Hard America. And his argument is that you can separate Americans into those who think of life as one of hard truths, or you can think of others who believe in terms of soft truths. He makes a very interesting argument. He says that when you start looking at this, you're looking at the future between a hard future and a soft future. He writes about the military, saying the only way you have a military is that people believe in hard truths. A society that doesn't believe in hard truths won't fight for anything anymore. Michael Barone believes that soft America offers inadequate preparation for life. It leads to adolescence rather than adulthood. It puts national destiny in trouble. Now, you can look at Michael Barone's book and decide for yourself if it's true that America is now divided in the culture war between hard America and soft America. But I'll tell you, evidently William Salatin's buying the argument, because that's exactly the argument he makes in response to last night's debate, when he says that McCain is basically a representative of hard America. Let me listen to what he says here. He says, bad, terrible, extreme, clear-cut feelings, mainstream America. That's the way McCain, Sarah Palin, and George W. Bush talk. There's honor and evil, good guys and bad guys. We fight for the good side. Our opponents don't. They're extreme. Then he goes on to write, Obama argued that women, in consultation with their families, their doctors, their religious advisors, are in the best position to make this decision. He pointed to the remainder of Barack Obama's statement that we played just a bit ago. Speaking of pragmatic solutions, he says this, common ground, prevent, options, help, reduce. These are diffusing and calming words. They fit Obama's personality, but more than that, they're pragmatic. He says Obama's doing quite nicely in the current environment. He's steady, practical, poised, boring. He's a technician. So Bob Schieffer pops a question about abortion, probably hoping to start a fight. McCain does his part. But what does Obama do? William Salatin argues he technifies it. He asked the question, well, a technical approach to abortion, and what he means by technical is just dealing with it as a purely pragmatic issue, not a moral issue. Will it satisfy the country? Well, he goes on and he says, the pro-life movement is betting on McCain-style combat. The pro-choice movement is betting on Obama-style pragmatism. He says, I think the pro-choicers have picked the wiser course because America is a pragmatic country. Well, folks, let me tell you where that leaves us. That leaves us with America so pragmatic we're willing to have unborn babies killed in the womb because there's another end we want to get to, and that, after all, is the shortcut. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Just a few final thoughts here. You can find my article on the question of abortion and the future at my website at albertmueller.com. I left it up a little longer than usual simply because there's been so much response to the article, and because I wanted to make sure folks had time to find it and to read it. You can go from my article by hyperlink to Robert P. George's article, which is also, I think, very, very important. I want to recommend to you one other resource that I think will really, really help you. It'll bless you in virtually every way, make you think in what I think are some very, very important ways. And I want to suggest you listen to a sermon preached this morning in chapel at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. The preacher was Dr. Russell D. Moore, who is Dean of the School of Theology and Senior Vice President for Academic Administration. He is also a frequent guest host on this program. He preached a sermon entitled Joseph of Nazareth as a Single Issue Evangelical, based upon a text from Matthew chapter 2. I think that you'll want to hear it. We're going to put the link up to that message at the website at albertmuller.com. Just go to the radio program, find today's program. You can listen not only to the podcast of today's program, but you can find the link to my article, the link to Professor George's article, and the link to Dr. Moore's message. Very persuasive, moving message. Going back to the slaughter of the innocents in the time of the birth and nativity of Jesus, looking at Herod as the one who was the opponent of life, and looking at Joseph playing an important role in the history of salvation, as he was the agent by his obedience to God's call that protected the life of the infant Jesus from Herod. Just a very important look at how important the life issue is for us. We'll be coming back again and again to the right issues, we hope, to discuss as we're trying to think together how we get from here to the 2008 presidential election. I want to admit right up front that there's fatigue in all of this. There are other things I want to talk about. But just in terms of responsibility, we got to face the fact that so much is on the table in terms of not just this election, but any presidential election. And the need for the right kind of conversation is so urgent that we're going to have some conversations about these things. And many of you are reminding me of that. Thanks for your emails. We're always glad to hear from you. Write me at albertmuller.com or from your own email service. Just address it to mail@albertmuller.com. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Interestingly, when you start looking at some of the issues of the 2008 the presidential race, and of course other races for the United States Senate, for Congress, and for state offices as well, what you're looking at over the next several days is a key turn in media coverage. We're getting close enough now where you're going to see the most concentrated coverage. You're going to see many of the issues in their clearest and most profound form, even over this weekend and in days to come. So watch, listen, let's be ready to talk. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.